GA Warship Ocean, Fondorian Space.
Stang!
Several heads turned. Even in the middle of a battle, Nyathol never cursed aloud. Hardly ever, anyway. And for the crew, it was an indicator of very bad news.
My apologies,
she said, fuming inside.
Some of our comrades have decided to leave the party early.
On the holochart, ship's icons winked out of existence, and every sensor, tracking screen, and holocom view showed the fleets thinning out. Some vessels that had been under Jason's command were still there, along with rescue and medevac tenders. Dala's fleet cruised among the dwindling numbers of ships, like Pharoxa sharks let loose in a shoal of Machi, and the garbled comms that she was picking up showed that even the so-called Maw Irregulars were having trouble working out who was on Jason's side. The Imperial ships were easier to identify and were taking much of the fire. Some conventional ion cannon and turbolaser, some phase shifter. If the phrase fog of war applied to any moment, then this was it.
I think this might well be called a mixed blessing,
Nyathol said.
But for the time being, I'll concentrate on the fact that Dala saved our necks.
Nyathol was now in the bizarre position of having beaten back Jason's combined fleet, but losing her hold on power. She stared in dismay at the modest tally of ships loyal to her on the screen, with Macon leaning over her shoulder.
I really thought he'd bitten off more than he could chew this time,
she said.
How has he managed to hold so many ships?
Charisma, terror, and the natural tendency of beings in uniform to follow procedure.
Macon shook his head.
Asking crews to choose between two joint leaders is going to end in a split one way or another. Anyway, what are we going to do? Chase him? Fight him for control of Coruscant? Because we'd need Dala and some additional hulls to make that happen. And invading the capital with another planet's forces would be a step too far politically, I think. Even if we could pull it off militarily.
Nyathol berated herself for not thinking that through. But would it have made any difference? The moment Jason refused to honor the surrender, Nyathol's course of action was decided for her.
No, I'll give him a headache instead. We'll withdraw to another base and set up a GA government in exile, providing a rallying point for his enemies, and we know he's got a growing collection. That'll split the GA, unfortunately, and perhaps we'll end up with some unappetizing bedfellows, but it beats playing Jason's game.
There was still the Jedi Council, of course, but Nyathol had to keep her distance. It was a case of mutual interests, but she couldn't commit her forces to Luke Skywalker's control, and she doubted if he'd give his Jedi pilots to her command. And where were they? The Stealth X's were around. Jason's undignified and narrow escape was proof of that. But working out what they were up to was another matter. Jason was pulling back. She'd risk opening comlinks and see if any Jedi answered.
Ocean to any Stealth X! Please respond!
She waited.
Come on, Luke. I know you're out there,
she said to herself.
Stealth X-5-5 to Ocean.
Master Skywalker! You're not in our way, so I won't get in yours. But a heads up would be appreciated.
Understood, Ocean. We were keeping Jason's ships off the backs of Fondorian emergency responders, but they seem to have somewhere more interesting to go now.
Mind if I ask if you had anything to do with the concealment of the Fondorian fleet?
We did our best to protect unarmed civilians working in the orbital yards.
That's borderline when it comes to Jedi ethics, is it not?
Our objective is to stop Jason with minimal loss of life.
Luke swallowed audibly, as if framing something he'd found difficult to say.
I very much regret what happened to the mine layer crews. I thought Fondor might tackle the threat differently.
We all have our regrets in war, and what looks like today's merciful solution turns into tomorrow's suffering, Master Skywalker. We're all part of that web of events.
Indeed.
My intention now is to set up a GA government in exile, because we can't beat Jason on Coruscant. Not without outside aid. And I'm not sure that's prudent right now.
Ocean, where will you go? Where can you go?
Nelestia.
Not ideal.
Fondor would have been handy, but we appear to have worn out our welcome.
Commit some rescue teams to the planet, and I'll see what I can arrange with President Bod. Stopping Jason ignoring the surrender might have bought you some points with him, and you're no longer the official GA.
I'm very grateful for your assistance, Master Skywalker,
she said.
I'm sure you do the same for me, Admiral.
Resilient reports that they've recovered Captain Neville, by the way, ma'am, said the comm officer. He asks if he can join Ocean.
Neville, one saved out of so many lost. Tell him permission granted.
Medivac speeder, approaching Bloodfin.
The battlefield was a scrapyard of debris from 100 ships and more. Kydus picked his way between slowly tumbling chunks of ship, ranging from hatches and torn sheets of plastoid panels to whole sections bigger than his own vessel. The battle was over, leaving desolation in its wake. But Tahiri was alive. He could feel her. And he could feel Jaina. Bloodfin drifted, apparently intact, ringed by debris that wasn't her own. Two Imperial cruisers circled her at a distance, almost the last of the Remnant's fleet to leave the area. Tahiri, I'm here. Help me out. Concentrate, Kydus thought.
Imperial Star Destroyer, Bloodfin.
Mandalore, we've got company.
Fett paused to adjust the audio in his helmet comlink with an eye blink. Blaster fire spat around the compartment, cracking the air apart.
Can you deal with it, Arade?
Med sprinter docking. Top rescue hatch.
How caring.
Fett was getting tired of waiting for the Moffs and the platoon of shock troopers defending the next compartment to give up and die.
Clear.
He lobbed in a small stun grenade. Then he hosed the space with blaster fire.
Courageous medic, or some scumbag abusing the non-combatant flag?
They'd better be medics, or they might be in need of surgery themselves. Leave it to me and Ram.
Myrta backed along the bulkhead, blaster raised, and stepped past Fett to check the compartment. The ship's defended heart was like a nest of boxes. That was great, as long as you weren't trying to get out. Somewhere aft of them, they could feel sporadic thumps through the ship as troopers tried to smash their way into the center section.
Did you fry the locks on the hatches to the hangar deck?
Yes!
Myrta listened at the next barricaded hatch to the Moff's last stand.
I hate being interrupted when I'm working. We can crack it later if they still want to fight.
Carrot and Vavut unrolled a strip of detonite to make a frame charge.
You reckon they'll cave in when we demorph this crate?
Maybe.
Carrot and Vavut waved him back, and he took cover with Myrta. The exploding charge left the hatch hanging open. Vavut ripped into one side with a crush gaunted hand, and fire spat out the hatchway. If Dalla hadn't wanted the ship largely intact, this could have been over by now. A volley of bolts struck Carrot in his Beskar chestplate and smacked him against the bulkhead. He made an animal grunt of annoyance.
Ah, oh, I love it when you boys get saucy,
he wheezed.
Come here, say hello to your Uncle Carrot.
Carrot dived into the opening with Vavut and Fett behind him. It was an adrenaline-fueled blur, as it always was, and Fett was aware of Vavut getting a faceful of white armor. The troopers must have shoved the remaining Moffs into the next compartment to shield them. The spaces were so cramped now that it was hand-to-hand fighting, with not even enough space to raise a rifle. Fett jumped onto a collapsed panel to vault over it, and it split beneath his boots, catapulting him forward onto a shock trooper. The man shoved his sidearm into Fett's belly and fired. The impact of rapidly expanding superheated air was like a gut punch, but Beskar really was worth the extra weight. Fett smacked down hard with his vibroblade into the gap between the chest plate and underarm, feeling it lodge and then penetrate. A blaster bolt that wasn't his cracked into the man's helmet in a blinding flash of light. The trooper stopped struggling.
Baba Weir,
said Myrta, trying to haul him up.
Where's the Jedi?
He scrambled to his feet, then heard a thud and turned. Jaina dropped down out of what looked like a ventilation duct. Tahiri, she said. She's gone into the shafts. Schematic says that's an emergency exit route. Last resort.
You busy, Mandalore?
Carrot yelled. He seemed to forget that he didn't need to raise his voice in a helmet. He usually preferred fighting without one.
Or we'll just mop up this bunch on our own, shall we?
On my way,
Fett said.
Solo, can you get it?
I need her blocked off somewhere along the route.
I'll do it.
Myrta adjusted her helmet.
I'm small enough to pass through in armor.
There's a med sprinter docked topside, just a hunch. But do those ducks join up?
Myrta checked her data pad.
Yeah. There's a space a little under 2 meters high running the underside of that hatch. I reckon Tahiri come to ride home. Maybe you should use the flamethrower.
Let's not, said Jaina, looking up at the deckhead. I can feel her, but I can't feel anyone outside on the hull.
You can sense that?
When I really concentrate. Might be a medroid, might be someone who can vanish in the Force, and I can guess who that'll be.
I didn't need the Force to know your brother would come to collect his Philip,
said Myrta, and dragged a seat across the deck to climb up to another ventilation grill.
And if I get to him first, your training's going to be wasted.
I said we leave the scumbag to her.
Fett lunged to grab Myrta's ankle, just as she hauled herself into the trunking.
Don't get killed now that I've bought your wedding present.
She shook her leg free.
Get a refund.
Jaina gave him a sympathetic shrug and bent her knees, bouncing a little as if she was going to jump. She did. She vanished up the shaft, and there was no sound of her crashing into anything. Fett turned to see Carrad's head stuck out of the hatch.
Don't get all envious. You can do that with a jetpack. Now, Mandalore, we're about to open your surprise, so if you wouldn't mind hauling your shebs in here...
I shouldn't have brought her. Or Orade.
Don't go soft on me, Fett.
I need someone to dance on my grave. How many have we got in there?
Fett picked his way through the debris to another hatch, one with double doors. The schematic said this was the inner sanctum. His terahertz penetrating radar showed bodies moving around, just a dozen or so now.
I reckon they've had a good 20 to 30 morphs in their lackeys in a flagship,
Vavot said.
I count 14 dead so far.
Well, they don't look like they're leading their troops from the front. Let's drill out the rest of the maggots.
Vavot and Fett crouched in the cover of a console ripped from the deck, squatting ready to spring forward as soon as Carrad blew the hatch bolts.
Cover!
Yelled Carrad.
Volume!
Fett sighed, ears ringing. The hatch doors ripped apart. Fett's stream of blaster fire preceded him as he jumped over Carrad and burst through the hatch. He waited for the noise to stop. Blaster, exploding transparaplast light fittings, shouts, cries of pain.
Well, index for them,
said Carrad. He aimed his blaster while he checked for any still alive. 5 men, maybe there were other officers, but not here. They'd reached the core of the Citadel. Fett looked up.
No, I didn't think they'd be that dumb.
There was a decent-sized hatch above his head, nothing so small as to need an undignified scramble to pass through. A panel of controls was inset into the deckhead next it. Fett lifted his arm to poke the panel with the muzzle of his blaster, and it ratcheted open, releasing a ladder that extended to the deck and came to rest on 2 feet.
They don't go down with a ship, then.
Sounds of twanging metal said that the shaft was either buckling with heat from a fire, or someone was hitting it, boots on rungs, probably.
Why do people always run away from us?
Carrad said.
Let's go ask him,
said Fett.
Imperial Destroyer Bloodfin, emergency route Beta 1.
The Star Destroyer was riddled with shafts that reminded Jaina of sinuses and a skull. She emerged at the top level, sweating.
Myrta. Where's Myrta?
She found Myrta squatting with her blaster, leveled ahead. Jaina dropped down too. Myrta's hand signals were very clear, 3 or 4 contacts ahead. Then she drew a T sign in the air with her fingertip. Tahiri, and shrugged. She's in there, Jaina breathed. I feel her. The schematic didn't show everything, apparently. Myrta lifted her left forearm, blaster held one-handed in her right hand, just like her grandfather, so Jaina could read the datapad housed in it. Jaina could see a hatch in the deck of the passage that wasn't shown. They bolted past it at a crouch, peeling the soles of their boots from the surface to avoid noise. And then they came to a corner. There was a slow, rhythmic scraping sound, like someone unscrewing a metal container. What happened next felt completely natural. Myrta pointed to the front and side, then to Jaina, and then to herself, and indicated forward. She'd give Jaina covering fire as she rounded the corner.
Hey, I'm getting used to these people, Jaina thought.
Myrta signaled.
1, 2, go!
Jaina shot around the corner, and even though she was in Myrta's arc of fire, she felt complete confidence. But ahead of them, Tahiri, struggling to release something in the deckhead, clinging to a ladder wearing a bright yellow environment suit. Clearly didn't. She let loose with a volley of blaster bolts that Jaina deflected with her lightsaber. The fire hit Myrta's plates. Myrta swore loudly and returned fire. Tahiri fended off the shots with her own lightsaber, and then Myrta just went crazy as far as Jaina was concerned. She ran full tilt at Tahiri, yelling some curse at her at the top of her voice, something like, "Gar Shabika!" Myrta shouldn't have been able to beat a Jedi's reaction time, but she did. She cannoned into Tahiri, and the impact lifted the Jedi bodily. Tahiri lashed out with the lightsaber. Jaina could see Tahiri through the faceplate, and knew she would never forget her look of horror as the blade of energy simply failed to slice through Myrta's body. "My lightsaber doesn't work!" For any Jedi, it was a shocking, naked moment. Jaina was only a split second behind Myrta, but it felt like minutes. She found herself on autopilot, somehow accessing that blind violence that Bevin had shown her, that absolute focus, and for a moment, for long enough, it shut down every warning about the dark side. Jaina swung at Tahiri like a madwoman. Myrta rolled clear, and there was the shunk of a vibroblade. She ducked under the flashing lightsabers, taking a fair few accidental hits, and Jaina saw it unfold in that odd slow motion of desperate combat. Myrta's blade connected with Tahiri's leg and dug into her thigh. Blood spurted. She'd hit an artery. Her blaster went spinning across the deck. And then there was firing from behind, and boots running. Tahiri fell back, clutching at her leg. Jaina twisted to see what was coming her way, and there it was. 3-4 men in brownish-gray uniforms and caps running toward them. One turned to fire behind him and got a bolt in the chest for his trouble. The rest opened fire on Jaina and Myrta, and it was clear they wanted to get to where Tahiri was going. Tahiri herself was second priority at that moment. Jaina slashed at the flying bolts. Fett, Carrot, and Vavut came pounding up behind the Moffs, and the firefight sent Jaina spinning on instinct alone, following her lightsaber. She felt the breath of cold air behind her. Metal rasped. Tahiri had dislodged whatever had jammed the hatch, and when Jaina turned, she saw Tahiri scrambling through the deckhead. There was blood everywhere on the deck. Myrta was on her knees, clutching her throat one-handed.
"Your Shabla brother,"
she gasped.
"He's up there."
The Moffs lay dead. Jaina felt Jason then. He was throttling Myrta to let Tahiri escape into the docking tube above the hatch. Jaina put every scrap of strength she had into breaking Jason's invisible force chokehold on Myrta. She saw it like a black chain and visualized the links flying apart just as Carriage shot past her and scrambled up the ladder followed by Vavut. Fett skidded to a halt and grabbed Myrta by her shoulder, as if he thought the blood on the deck might be hers.
"I'm okay."
"If he's hurt you, I'll break my own rule and take a long time killing him."
"Don't worry."
Myrta rubbed her neck.
"I got my own Jedi."
Then the hatch above them slammed shut. Fett took a couple of steps up the ladder and hammered on it.
"Let me up there."
He hammered again. It must have been the airlock. They could hear nothing.
"Carrot, open the hatch. Now, leave the scum. You too, Vavut."
Med Sprinter, belly hatch docking tube.
"Tahiri!" Kydus could see her in the dark tunnel of the tube, through the transparisteel viewport set in the outer hatch. The tube was 5 or 6 meters deep, long enough to extend through the multi-skinned hull and into the airlock beneath. He opened the hatch. It was a simple manual opening, the kind that flipped back on itself. "Tahiri, come on!"
"I'm stuck,"
she said weakly. "You've only got a few meters to go." Jaina. He could feel Jaina very close. "Come on!"
I'm bleeding. I'm trying to hold it together."
"Where?"
"Thigh. The blood's just pumping out. My suit's caught."
Femoral artery. She'd be dead in a couple of minutes. He could force lift her.
"Here's a trick we can learn you, son,"
a voice below snarled.
"Breathe vacuum? We can. We're well hard. It goes like this."
There were Mandalorians below Tahiri in the tube. A power tool began whining, and Kaida smelled metal being ground. Air rushed past him, whipping small scraps of flimsy down the tube. They're cutting open the docking tube.
I've caught my suit!
Kaida could see Tahiri now, the blood-soaked leg of her environment suit bunched up in one fist. Maybe to seal the cut, maybe in some futile attempt to stop the hemorrhage.
My suit's caught on something sharp!
Don't you dare die on me! Kaida slipped into the tube, catching onto the handholds. Grab me when I'm in reach and hang on! He'd force jump when he had a hold of her, and pull free of the docking ring. It was fine, he could do that. And then, something above made the med sprinter shudder. The tube creaked and strained at his end. The hatch slammed shut overhead. He was shut in the docking tube that was venting atmosphere with a dying woman beneath and some psychotic Mandalorians bent on suicide.
They've got vacuum-proof suits,
Tahiri said. If I push hard, I can open that hatch again. The air wasn't venting as fast as he'd feared. The men below were using some kind of powered saw on the tough material, and the aperture they'd managed to create was small compared with the volume of air rushing to escape. Kaidus dropped down into the tunnel, and something grabbed his leg. He thought it was Tahiri, but it was a gauntleted hand, and it hurt. It was crushing his ankle. Someone grabbed him around the waist, too, but that was Tahiri, he hoped. His ankle twisted. That was not Tahiri.
Hi there, Jason. I feel like I know you already, you Hatoon.
Kaidus was staring into the Mandalorian's face now, or at least his helmet. There were no eyes to fix on, just a T-shaped nothing set in a pocked and scarred violet metal visor. The man had a tight grip on his ankle. The muzzle of his blaster was in Kaidus's belly. And the man didn't fire. Kaidus didn't even need a second. A fraction's hesitation was all he needed to get free. It was a trick that had bought him time with Mara. Not a full illusion, but enough to check someone at the reflex level. The face of a loved one, even though they knew the identity of the enemy they were facing. He opted for Aelin Vell's face.
Doesn't suit you, Dodge 80,
said the Mandalorian wearily, and then simply held his blaster to Kaidus's kneecap as Tahiri clung to him in the tangle of limbs and weapons.
Ah, fit. You spoil sport. I have to have some fun.
He fired into Kaidus's leg, then he just let go. The agony was suddenly somewhere else. It wasn't happening to Kaidus at that moment, but to another Kaidus, a long way away. He put his last best effort into force-punching the hatch overhead, not pushing, nothing so refined, and bursting it open. At the moment he did that, he pushed off hard with his uninjured leg and rocketed through the docking ring into the sprinter with Tahiri clutched to him. The next thing he knew, he was on the med sprinter's deck. Tahiri sprawled beside him. He slammed the inner hatch controls, and the hull sealed. Kaidus hit the automated controls as he stumbled past the pilot's console and sent the med speeder shooting vertically away from the Bloodfin's hull. It's okay, Tahiri, he said, centering himself again. We're both going to live to fight another day. It's our destiny.
Office of the Chief of State, Coruscant. 4 days later.
Routine, salaries paid on time, nightly holodramas, predictable prices, was the anesthetic that kept Coruscant docile in Kaidus's brief absence. He inhaled the familiar scent of carpet, warm datapad plastoid, and fresh brewed calf as his office doors sighed apart and he limped to his desk. The new admin droid glided in.
I've prepared a digest of the non-urgent matters that arose during your absence, Chief of State.
It placed a neat stack of data pads on the fine desk that used to belong to Cal Omos.
I've taken the liberty of clearing Admiral Nyathol's office and transferring all defense business to this department. I've thinned out the diary a little, sir. I anticipated that you might be tired after the events of the last week.
Excellent. I appreciate your foresight.
How is Lieutenant Bela?
Recovering well, thank you. Kaidus found a cup of calf poured for him, piping hot, and settled at the desk to skim the data pads. The droid had collated media coverage of the past week, too. Kaidus shuffled through the pads to choose one digest to play on the larger desk screen. He skipped through the battle footage and the studio analysis of who failed and why. Irrelevant. All history already. And his eye was caught by a headline from one of the scurrilous gossip holozines. not one focused on the sleazy private lives of Emotodrama and Holovid stars, but one of the more pretentiously political versions that mixed satire, really very funny, he had to admit, with real news, savagely written. Jason's game of happy families joined Gangster of State. Cardis was used to the steady stream of attacks about the removal of Cal Omas and indefinite emergency powers, but it was all talk in the fringe media. Citizens did nothing about it and got on happily with their lives. This story opened with the coup and went on to list actions against members of his own family, the attempt to court-martial Jaina, the arrest warrant on his parents, and the rift with Luke and the whole Jedi Council. Then there was a reference to the death of Luke Skywalker's wife on Kavin at a time when Jason Solo was away from Coruscant. Juxtaposed with the death of Aelin Vel, dubbed Fett Jr., Cal Omas, Dirk Edgen, and a much more direct line about his involvement in an alleged fatal assault on Lieutenant Tabut not being investigated by Fleet or CSF. Kaidus laid his cup down on the desk and read the summary again. He found he was actually upset by it. No, offended. Hurt. But that's not how it happened, Kaidus told himself. It wasn't like that. The report made him look like a common gangster, a thug who had seized power and then went about removing anyone who offended him or stood in his way, like some hut crime lord. He slammed his cup down on the desk and calmed the droid. Get Captain Shivu in here, please. While Kaidus waited for Shivu to arrive, he took deep calming breaths, seeing the color return to the room and its proportions revert to normal. I don't meditate much these days, do I? Action had to be his meditation. He had so much to do. Tahiri would have to shoulder more of the burden. She was a Sith apprentice now, and that meant work. Kaidus had been planning to summon the editor of the Holozine to his office and demand a full retraction and a new article explaining the truth of his actions. But the longer he waited, the less pressing it seemed. Did anyone who mattered read the Holozine? Had it started riots? No. All that really mattered was that the few key people around him understood his burden. Shivu, for example. Kaidus changed his mind. He wouldn't ask Shivu to send a GAG squad out to arrest the editor, and so guarantee that the hack would listen to Kaidus carefully. A pot of calf, then, and time to catch up on policy. Kaidus had missed having Shivu at his right hand during the battle. Valuing loyalty was something his grandfather had understood well. But Kaidus was also aware that subservience wasn't necessary. A little honest contention was far more important. The doors opened. Shivu, looking carefully unemotional as always, walked in and stood in front of the desk. Welcome back, sir. His quiet dislike was tangible. Eventful few days. Kaidus gestured to the chair. Are you surprised about Niathal? Shivu sat down. Not really, sir. Just the timing. Better that than trying to oust me while I was off-planet. Yes, I can imagine that would have been messy, sir. He was telling the absolute truth as he saw it. Kaidus could feel the solid certainty in him. Look, Kaidus said, offering him the Holozine. Look at this ungrateful nonsense. Shivu looked at it quickly in a way that said he'd either didn't want to read it or had already done so, in detail. But he was a former CSF officer. He'd have read it. Do you want me to take action, sir? If you'd asked me a half hour ago, I'd have said yes. So you'd prefer to forget it? The allegations are pretty strong, but then it's a satirical Holozine, known for that kind of lurid story. Oh, I'm not disputing the facts, Captain. Really? Shivu flared a little in the Force, a white-hot burst of surprise. They would have to prove the accusations if you pressed the issue. It's just that they don't seem to understand why I took certain actions. They make me sound like a criminal. Kaidus clenched his fist in his lap and let out a breath before feeling in control again, back in his own skin and not watching himself from the outside. They're only saying what I hear crew whispering in the mess, saying that I've killed a lot of people and that I wasn't on duty when Mara Skywalker was killed, and that they wouldn't put it past me to assassinate even my own aunt, like one of those lunatic inbred Irmenu emperors. That's what they say, isn't it? Shivu was never one to show apprehension. Does that worry you, sir? Do you think it should? Well, they seem to have sources within the fleet and other departments. I despise disloyalty too. But is it worth chasing gossiping clerks when we have admirals handing battle plans to the Jedi Council? Depends on the effect on morale, sir.
You sound just like Nyathol.
Command is all about harnessing the troops' willingness to suspend sensible self-interest and put their lives on the line when everyone else is running the other way. That's morale. You're better placed than anyone to feel what your troops really think of you.
A lesser man would have agreed frantically with a capricious superior, afraid of saying the wrong thing. But Shivu wasn't intimidated. Kaidus still sensed wariness, but also a powerful sense of certainty, like a permacrete slab. This was a man who knew his own mind and wasn't afraid to stand up and be counted. And as he hadn't fled like Nyathol, that meant he was here because he wanted to be on Kaidus' team. He understood justice, too.
"Do you want to know how it happened?"
Kaidus asked. Shivu pursed his lips as if embarrassed. "Do you think I need to know?"
"I'd like you to know," Kaidus said, "if I'm not burdening you."
"No, sir."
"I knew that Mara or Luke would come after me sooner or later for taking their precious son as my apprentice. Do you know what I mean by apprentice? I'm a Sith Lord."
Oh, it felt good and clean to be able to say that openly. Shivu didn't recoil.
"Do you know what a Sith is? We're Force users."
"Is it like the old-fashioned wing of the Jedi philosophy, sir?"
"That's an excellent description. Yes. We're more inclined to bring law and order than the Jedi Council."
Shivu's expression said it was an academic point.
"So, did she come after you, sir?"
"I was leaving the Hapes cluster when she ambushed me in her Stealth X, and we ended up on Cavan, where she pursued me into the abandoned tunnels and tried to kill me. We brawled, actually brawled. She brought down the ceiling and she was like a madwoman, complete blind rage. I had lightsaber, blaster, and crush injuries, and the only way I could stop her was to use the poison darts I keep as a last line of defense." Shivu looked shaken.
"Well, at least I know why Ben changed his mind about serving in the Guard now."
"It really wasn't personal revenge, Captain," Kaidus said. "That's for small people. It was part of my path to Sith ascendancy."
"That must be very distressing, sir," Shivu said.
Kaidus felt some deep, raw emotion in him that he couldn't quite place. But it was pity, in a way.
"Being one of your family."
"Yes, I'm putting it out of my mind as best I can. Because we were very close, once."
Shivu adjusted his jacket in that awkward way of someone who wanted to end a painful conversation.
"Try a police tip, sir. When we're faced with something horrible, something disgusting, a terrible crime, we try to forget what we feel about the perpetrator in case the anger distracts us and makes us careless. You know, cutting corners to get the guy. Maybe losing the case in court because of that. So we focus on the victim. We find the pity. Pity keeps us going. We want to give the victims and their family justice. Closure.
Think about that sometime, sir." "That's very helpful, actually, Captain. By the way, I have a title now. Darth Kaidus. Would you mind using it in the future?"
Shivu's expression was now unreadable.
"Yes, sir."
He seemed to be trying out the name under his breath.
"Do I still call you sir?"
"Technically, it's my lord," Jason said. "But sir is fine on duty."
Former Imperial Outpost, Endor.
Ben had spent an hour working himself up to playing the holorecording Lon Shivu had risked his life to get. Han and Leia had found a new, safer location for the Jedi base. Now Ben stood in the center of the stark room that had been his quarters, all the fixtures and equipment crated for the pullout from Endor. Sooner or later, he would have to move off that spot. He'd have to walk down the dusty passage, picked clean of anything that might be a clue to where the Jedi Resistance had gone, and say to his father, uncle, and aunt that he had things he needed to show them. Ben willed himself to move. It wasn't that he couldn't, not like some weird psychiatric paralysis, but he knew that the moment he shifted his weight and began walking, the short journey would end with showing his family, his poor dad, that awful, awful conversation between Jason and Shivu. The image wasn't good, because Shivu had been forced to use a holocam with an aperture like a pinhead just so it would sit on his tunic unnoticed. The sound was perfect, though. Shivu risked wearing the wire, as he called it, because Jason was so used to GAG officers carrying surveillance kits that nothing like that struck him as unusual.
Move. Now.
Ben walked. He went to find his father first. Ben found Jag and Zek in the former briefing room, with their boots up on a rough plank table about knee-high, chatting in dejected tones.
Hi, Ben.
Jag gestured to the seat next to him.
You coming in or what? Are you all right?
No, he's not all right, Zek said. I could feel him seething two floors up.
Ben needed to take a run at it if he was going to do it at all.
No offense, guys, but can you leave, please?
Yeah. But are you sure we can't help?
Zek sat up straight and shuffled himself to the edge of the seat.
Whatever it is.
Actually, you could go find Dad, Uncle Han, and Aunt Leia for me. Tell them I've got stuff to show them, and they all need to see it together.
He thought of Jaina a little later than he should have done.
And Jag, can you try to get a hold of Jaina? I need to set up a comm so she can hear and see what I show everyone else.
Both men shut up right away. They responded to his officer voice, as Jory Lakoff had called it, and knew he was serious. He set up a table so he could lay out evidence on it and stand the comlink where it could best transmit the session to Jaina. He could hear Leia's voice getting closer outside, saying how it would be handy for seeing more of Alana, which he took to mean the new location for the base. When she walked through the door, she stopped in her tracks for a second. Han nearly piled into the back of her.
Hey, sweetheart,
she said.
Whatever it is, we're all here, and we're going to listen to you carefully, okay? It's not me talking, Ben said. The evidence can do that.
Han, hands on hips, blew out a breath, then walked up and hugged Ben with one arm, in that half-embarrassed male way. Luke came in a few minutes later with his hair disheveled, as if he'd been running. Ben shunted the data pads around the tabletop.
Plenty of time, Dad, he said quietly. Just waiting for Jag to track down Jaina and get a stable comm connection. Then we'll start. Take a seat.
He couldn't turn and face them all yet, so he must have shuffled those pads and charts a dozen pointless times before Jag came back brandishing a live comm link. He set it down where Ben showed him.
Can you see all this, Jaina?
Ben said. She looked as if she was standing in a storage room.
I can see all of you and the table.
Okay,
Ben had to warn them.
This isn't easy to hear. I'm going to show you the physical evidence first, and then a recorded conversation. I'm going to show you things that link Jason to Mom's death, and then what he told Captain Shivu about it.
Ben took a breath. Using the data pads and projecting the images onto the screen they used for small holocharts, he showed them a copy of the GAG Stealth X log that proved when Jason had left Coruscant and when he'd returned the vessel to the hangar. He showed them the logs for Mom's flight. He showed them the charts, with Mom's known movements in Hapen space, provided by Hapen ATC, and Tenel Ka's note confirming when Jason had arrived at the palace and then left. He showed the forensics droid, cracked open, and explained how he and Shivu had used it to collect trace evidence from Jason's Stealth X. Then, he played the conversation between Shivu and Jason, and sat back in silence. He couldn't watch this time, and just stared into his lap at clasped hands, hearing Uncle Han inhaling every so often, as if he was about to cough. The recording ended. Nobody said anything for a while. It was Jaina who jerked them out of it.
Ben,
she said softly.
Ben, can you transmit that recording to me now, please? I need some time to study it.
Yeah, sure, sure.
It was an excuse to stand up and occupy his hands while he thought of something to say. Aunt Leia, always the one who said the perfect thing at the perfect time and got everyone organized in a crisis, walked up to him, turned him around slowly by his shoulders, and just held him in silence. When she drew back, there were tears in her eyes. Ben had never seen her cry before.
Thanks, Ben,
she said.
You did a good job. And you did it right.
Ben hung on long enough to send Jaina the recording, and then just had to get outside. He scrambled up one of the nearest trees to a platform that had been part of an Ewok walkway in the forest, and sat with his legs dangling, staring out into the haze over the valley. Whether it was a few minutes later or much longer, Ben couldn't remember, but he heard someone climbing the creaking ladder of twisted vines. Then Dad sat down next to him, letting his legs hang over the edge of the platform too, but with a little less ease, as if his knees were stiff. Ben leaned against his shoulder. They ended up propped against each other, just looking out across the forested slope and watching the day run out of things to say to itself. They didn't talk either. There was nothing to add, and both of them no longer needed words anyway. It was a flame and garnet sunset, spectacular even by Endor's standards.
Bevin Vazur Farm, near Keldabe.
Myrta, where have you been?
Sintis asked. Been on a job, Babuir. Fett watched Sintis making her way competently around the room, navigating by touch. She located Myrta and the two women hugged.
What job, sweetheart?
We seized an Imperial Star Destroyer. Sintis parted her lips slightly, then laughed.
Oh, just a little job. Nobody hurt?
Loads of people, but not us.
I can remember how to strip down a blaster.
You were a bounty hunter, Babuir.
I can recall chasing a man who had something I wanted back. A metal box. I'd better remember how I did it, if I want to earn a living again.
Watching Sintis desperately grabbing at scraps of her life and trying to build herself back into a whole woman made Fett feel scared and dirty. It reminded him that he'd failed in every aspect of living, except his job, except killing people.
Sin, you never have to worry about scraping a living again. I owe you credits. A lot. I'm paying up.
Sintis felt her way toward him. She found his hand and took it.
I know I must have married you for a good reason. And whatever went wrong, you still seem like a good man.
Sin, there's some more bad news you need to know.
I can feel some of the things in the Heart of Fire, she said. But I can't make sense of it.
Okay, sit down.
He steered her to a chair. Myrta watched as if she was waiting to pounce on any mistake.
Our daughter died.
Sintis took the news with a few blinks. It was a while before she spoke again.
I feel bad that I can't remember enough about her. What happened to her? She must have been an adult because Myrta's here.
It was a guessing game, and Fett hated those at the best of times.
I'm going to get it all over with now, or I'll just be giving you a fresh bit of misery every day. She was killed, Sin. She was a bounty hunter. She blamed me for you going missing on a job, because I should have been there to look after you both. She stalked me for years, and she tried to kill me. But she got picked up by the secret police on Coruscant, and she died under interrogation. She was 53 or 54, I think. And that's about it. Except she raised Myrta to hate me too. And Myrta tried to kill me, but we got that out of our systems.
Sintis did a reasonable job of controlling the shock. But her lips moved silently as she tried framing a question and failed for a few moments. The anguished expression in her eyes was all the worse for the fact that Fett knew she couldn't even see their expressions.
The Barf who killed my girl. Where is he? Is he still alive? I'll fix that.
Sintis burst in anger.
And how could you want to kill your own grandfather, Myrta? You didn't even know him.
Don't blame her, Sin. Whether Aelin knew it or not, she was right to loathe me. The only good news is that I'm a rich old man now, and you're still young, so I can pay, and you can do some living.
That was his emotional limit. He'd hit the end stop today. If he'd been like Bevin, all heart and pure courage, unafraid of love or the risk of being hurt by it, he'd have held Sintis and told her all the little details that would have softened the blow and made more sense of it once the shock wore off. But he wasn't Bevin. Nowhere near.
I'll see you later. I think we can find a special doctor to get your memory back, and maybe your sight.
Sintis had her hand to her mouth now in a kind of slow-burn horror.
Well, at least I'll be ready for it.
I'm sorry.
She rubbed her eyes.
I'm sorry too, Bo.
Oyubat Takaf, Keldabe.
They said you wanted to see me, Jedi.
Jaina looked up. She'd felt him coming anyway. Gotob left a very distinctive impression in the Force. Venku, always hovering close to support the old man if he faltered, was a dim light next to him. They were both edgy and a little hostile.
I do, Gotob, she said, and stood to pull up a chair for him. And you, Venku, please, sit down.
Both men lifted off their helmets.
You want something from me, Gotob said. Spit it out.
You're a healer, am I right?
He pulled off both gauntlets, revealing age-spotted, veined hands, and held them up.
Yes, I did a lot of healing. I look even older than I already am, don't I? Drains you, healing.
How many folks here know you're a Jedi?
I used to be a Jedi,
he said quietly.
I left the Order 60 years ago and became a Mondoad.
What about you then, Benku? They still hadn't said whether anyone knew what they were. You're harder to pin down, but you can use the Force, can't you?
I can, Benku said, but I avoid it.
So who knows? Nobody, I bet. Are you scared even now? Come on, I know what it's like to be a Jedi and walk into a cantina full of Mondos.
Why do you care?
Gotob said. In case it has serious consequences for you, of course.
Venku and Gotob looked at each other, as if in some unspoken debate. Venku sighed and shook his head.
Buir, if you want to come clean after all these years, and any Mondoad so much as looks at you the wrong way, you know I'd kill them. After all you've done for Mandalore, nobody can call you Jetu.
And what about you, Kadika?
I'm not that much used to the Kaminoans now, Gotob snorted.
Fett would still sell you.
So you don't like Fett? She said. Gotob shrugged.
He's completely amoral. He cared nothing for Mandalore when we were occupied by the Empire.
I'm missing something here, Gotob. So let me tell you what I'm asking for. Fett's ex-wife, Sintis, she was stored in carbonite for over 30 years, and now she's blind and suffering from amnesia. I was hoping you might be able to heal her. She's done well to recover as far as she has, but there's not much more that doctors can do.
You sure she wants to remember being married to Fett?
He asked. It was probably a random insult, but maybe Gotob knew that their past was a messy one.
He thinks it's fairer if she knows everything, so she can make better decisions about her future.
Gotob leaned back in his seat and looked at Venku as if they'd had a bet on something.
Well, I've lived to see a lot of unexpected things, but Fett growing a conscience, why he?
The doors parted, and Carid came in with a couple of other men, laughing loudly. He waved to Jaina as if she were just another regular. She couldn't imagine him coming after this frail old man and harming him for once having been a Jedi. If Gotob had been here for 60 years, then he must have known that Mandalorians, however violent and uncompromising, tended not to blame folks for who their parents or brothers were. On Mandalore, you could erase your past.
I was a Jedi general in the Clone Wars,
Gotob said at last.
I left the Order because I couldn't stomach how we talked about compassion and then turned a blind eye to using human clones for our slave army. The clones I served with were my brothers. I helped them escape. I healed them. I did whatever I could to atone for the wrong that Jedi did to those men. And Venku, Kadika, his mother was a Jedi and his father was a clone soldier. We hid from the Empire for years because they could have bred a whole new clone army from him. We hid so well that not even Fett's fixer, that Bevy, knew who we were, or even what our true clan name was.
It didn't answer the question about Fett, but Jaina felt she'd pushed it as far as she could go. Living in fear and secrecy bred a certain paranoia.
So would you do it for Sintis Vel?
Healing's hard work, Venku said. Look what it's done to him.
Fett would pay. And if he wouldn't, I would, Jaina said.
Gotob nodded as if she confirmed something.
Well, your brother killed a daughter. It's the least you can do. But I don't want your credits or Fett's. I'll do it because I can.
She's at Bevin's farm.
That evening, while Jaina was eating dinner with Bevin's family and making Shalk and Brilla giggle by moving their plates with a force push, she felt Gotob and Venku approaching the farmhouse.
Bevin, she said, it's Gotob. He's the one who's going to be doing the healing. He's a Jedi. He used to be anyway. Don't punish him, please. He's been one of you for nearly 60 years.
Bevin and Medrit looked at each other, and it was obvious that Fett's fixer, as Gotob called Bevin, was clearly rattled that a secret of that magnitude had eluded him.
He chewed thoughtfully, gaze fixed on the pot of calf on the table.
"We won't even tell Fed it's him, if he's that scared,"
he said at last. Gotob edged into the room with Venku looming over him like a bodyguard, and the two children stared at him. They didn't say a word. Gotob nodded politely and followed Jaina into Sintas's room.
"So, do you work miracles?"
Sintas asked, turning her head towards him.
"I could do with one."
"You can still say no," Gotob said. "You know you have tragedy in your past."
Sintas, amnesiac or not, showed a streak of tough resolve that must have stood her in good stead as a bounty hunter.
"Then I'll face it, because it's part of who I am."
Gotob sat on the edge of Sintas's bed and placed both hands gently on her head. Even for Jaina, used to meditation, 2 hours of sitting with relative strangers and saying nothing was a trial.
"Oh,"
Sintas said at one point.
"Oh, that's... that's odd."
Gotob smiled. It transformed him.
"I've healed brain injuries before, and my patients tell me they get disjointed flashbacks. Don't be afraid."
"It's not memories," Sintas said. "I can see flashes of light."
Jaina felt genuine elation.
"How many sessions might this take?"
"I don't know,"
Gotob said. He took one hand off Sintas's forehead and moved the lamp closer to her.
"I've never healed a Kifar before."
Sintas flinched.
"I can see the contrast."
She rubbed her eyes, straining, and turned to the lamp.
"I can see light and dark."
Gotob seemed to be flagging. Venku took the old man's elbow and steered his hand back to his side.
"Enough for tonight, Buir," he said. "Let's get some rest. We have a long way to go."
Medrit gave Venku a package as he left, a bundle of packets that looked like an assortment of meat and preserves. Mandalore was still a hungry place to live.
"I'm sure Fett will be grateful," he said.
"No need."
Gotob headed for the door, leaning on Venku's arm.
"It's for Sintas Vel, not him."
Bevin listened to the speeder's drive fade into the night.
"I think I scared him off," he said. "I don't know if they'll come back."
Jaina lay awake that night, wondering what would happen when it got around, as things seemed to do here, about Gotob and Venku. Had either of them had kids? Were there Force-sensitive Mandalorians everywhere? It was all getting complicated and making her mind race when she needed to sleep and to concentrate on making the most of the training time she had with Fett. She made her way downstairs and found Bevin pottering around the kitchen, doing chores in total silence. Sintas was definitely having nightmares. Jaina listened outside for a while and then went in to sit with her, just in case she woke up screaming. She was thrashing around, muttering incoherently, and the only words Jaina could understand were,
"You could have told them."
Jaina found herself unable to keep her eyes open and dozed in the chair. She woke with a start. Sintas was sitting up, and it was starting to get light outside.
"Stang,"
Sintas said.
"Daylight.
You can see?"
"I can." "That's excellent news."
Jaina took her hand.
"You were having a nightmare." "I had a dream, but I don't think it was one. I remembered something. There was a bounty I was hunting, but I ended up being grabbed, and there was this barb saying I'd be worth something for ransom, and he shot me full of some sedative or other."
"Someone who knew you were Fett's ex-wife?"
"Bo. Oh, Stang, it's coming back. Bo never took kindly to anyone messing with me, even after we split up. Then there was...
oh, Aelin. No."
Jaina braced for some trauma to emerge.
"Hey, take it easy." "She was so excited. I said I'd be back from the job in time to take her to Coruscant, see the big city, buy her some nice things."
Aelin had been about 16. Sintas seemed as tough as old boots, but tears were now streaming down her face.
"Bo, he shot someone."
That didn't narrow it down much. Jaina handed her a cloth to wipe her face.
"Maybe you need some meds to slow all this down a little." "No, no, I need to remember this. I need to."
Sintas put her hand to her mouth.
"Aelin,
And then Myrta. Whatever did I say that made her go and do all that? I never told her about it. We never talked. I never told her why Beau and I divorced.
Myrta thought he abandoned you.
It was definitely none of Jaina's business, and she shouldn't have said it.
Too late now. Aelin blamed his not being around for your, well, death.
I know, but look, Beau was exiled for murder. It wasn't like that. It was much more complicated.
I think I'd better go and get Myrta, Jaina said.
No, please, not yet. You look like a sympathetic person who understands how families can tear themselves apart.
Okay, said Jaina. But I still think you should go and get your granddaughter.
Not yet,
Sintis said.
I need to work out how I'm going to explain this to her, that her grandfather was exiled for killing the man who raped me, his superior officer.
Keldabe, Mandalore, a week later.
Myrta and Orade had exchanged marriage vows that morning, Vavut said, and so it was high time to have a few drinks and celebrate. Fett heard about it from Bevin. If he allowed himself to think about it too much, it would eat at him. He sat in Slave One's cockpit, half listening to the HNE financial news while he did the maintenance on his HUD. Mandalore, self-sufficient and well able to pull itself up by its bootstraps minus Fett, went on thriving all around him.
You have to give her the stone. It won't change a thing, but at least she can sell it, and she might even listen to what it's got to say.
He fished in his belt pouch and held the oval stone up to the light from the viewscreen, a royal blue heart of fire as rare as they came, 5 centimeters long and superbly cut. His broker had done pretty well to find it. If he held it just so, the rainbow of colors was complete. He peered into its heart with a magnifier from his HUD toolkit and admired the play of internal fire that created the iridescence. Geologists said it was due to microscopic bubbles of pinacolite trapped when the crystal was first formed, and also that the substance might have explained the stone's ability to store data from people who'd owned it. Kifar preferred the more mystic explanation, that it trapped a little bit of the soul of both giver and receiver. It definitely did record something. Gotob, the Barf was a Jedi, and Fett had worked it out even if Bevin didn't want to discuss it, could certainly skim Fett's unhappy marital history from its painful detail. He wondered how much he'd burden Sintis if some of his soul got trapped in the magnificent blue stone.
You know, the thing actually does it. You had proof.
Loud hammering on the side viewscreen made him look up. Bevin was standing on the hull, making impatient gestures.
Soapin, Fett said. Get your shibs to your granddaughter's wedding feast, Bobica.
Bevin stood in the hatchway in his cobalt blue armor, with a dark navy leather comma, the traditional Mandalorian half-kilt.
It's a disgrace if you don't.
Fett held up the gem between thumb and forefinger.
Mitch is your best car, Gam.
For Myrta?
Sin.
Bevin just shook his head.
She'd probably prefer one of your properties.
I'm way ahead.
Fett reached inside his dump pouch and slid out a flimsy envelope, the kind old-fashioned lawyers used.
Portfolio here of shares and property. She'll never have to worry about bounty hunting again. When you give it to her, say that...
Sure, Bobica,
Bevin said.
Tell her yourself. It's one errand. I'm not running for you. But when you want to tell me what happened...
I mean what really happened. You know where I am.
Bevin jumped down off the airframe and stalked off. Fett went on tinkering with his helmet and wondering if Jaina Solo had what it took to deal with her brother.
What's the matter, Beau? Said a voice behind him. Don't you worry about security anymore?
He stopped. Sintis was right behind him.
I can leave my hatch open here. I don't have to worry about Mondo's sin.
That's just what Jaster said. And look what happened to him. So, as soon as I get my memory back and I can see, you're gone again? Still angry?
No.
He waited for her to edge forward into the front of the cockpit and look at him. But she stayed aft.
I'm glad you're okay.
And why haven't you shown at Myrta's celebration?
Cowardice.
I told Myrta the truth. She's devastated.
You shouldn't have done it before her wedding.
Beau... I never made Aelin hate you. I never told her anything. That was the problem. She filled in the gaps too much. I should have explained, but I wanted us to get on with our lives. Forget you. Hey, you know.
I know. I'm not good at telling people things either.
If you'd told the magistrate why you shot him, you'd never have been convicted.
And have everyone know what he did to you? You didn't tell anyone. You didn't want it dragged out in public.
There was only one thing Fett could have done with a scumbag like Lenovar. He wasn't just any rapist, although that would have been bad enough. He was a journeyman protector. Fett's superior officer on Concord Dawn, a constable who should have been upholding the law, not betraying his uniform, and Fett's trust.
If I could have killed him a few more times, I would have, Fett thought.
Sintis edged closer behind the pilot's seat. Fett thought it was better if she didn't have yet another illusion ruined.
I'd have gone anywhere with you, Bo, she said. I didn't care if we lost everything.
I know. I was the one who didn't have what it took.
The last time I saw your face, what were you, 19?
Close enough.
She was desperate to look at him. 50-odd years. He understood why she needed to, but it was still a bad idea for both of them. Being Sintis, she did it anyway. She slid around in front of his seat and looked into his eyes. Her, mid-30s, perfect. Him, over 70, with a savage life in those absent years that etched itself in every pore.
Oh, Bo, whatever happened to you?
I survived.
She touched the scars on his cheek, scars that had been etched by the Sarlacc acid. It was another story he needed to tell her.
Come and see Myrta, she said. Please.
She'll give me the full number on why it was my fault for not telling her.
No, she's a big girl now. She knows things are never as black and white as we want them to be.
Sintis had never expected him to be eloquent, which was a blessing right then. He handed her the envelope. That was the simplest bit.
Got a few things for you.
Bo, you don't have to do that.
Just shut up and take it. And I should have bought you one of these at the time. And this is yours, anyway.
Fett went back to calibrating his HUD, just so he didn't have to watch.
I know what's in this canister, she said. And I can't look at it right now.
It was the only hollow image of the three of them as a family. And that short, idyllic time before it all collapsed.
But you're insane to buy me the stone. I'm never worth that much.
Sell it. It's yours.
I've got the first one.
Half of it. And a lot's happened since, so there'll be a different set of Fett memories in the Blue Stone. If you ever want to do some catching up.
Sintis put the stone in the hip pocket of her pants.
Let's do the family thing. Just this once.
He hadn't finished calibrating the HUD, but he put his helmet on anyway. And once it was on, he looked like the Bo she once knew and loved. And the lost years vanished for a brief time. They went to Myrta's feast. Maybe Sintis would do that Kiffar thing with the new Heart of Fire, and read and discover everything that had happened to him while they were apart, and what he just couldn't manage to tell her, even now. It was just 3 words, but it was 3 too many for Boba Fett.
Jedi Camp. Undisclosed location in the transitory mists, near the Hapes Cluster.
Perfect Sanctuary was just a bedroll and a blanket on the dirt floor, and it was all that Ben needed right then. He just wanted to sleep. He crawled into the tent and let himself collapse face down on the bed. You okay, Ben? Luke's voice drifted over the faint whisper of breezes, cracking with fatigue. Ben rolled over and stared up into the ridge of the tent.
Yeah, Dad. I really think I am now. You?
You bet. Just checking.
Get some sleep.
Look who's talking. But Ben couldn't sleep. Not yet. Sleep would come when his brain decided it was good and ready, so he didn't fight it. He just let his mind drift for what felt like hours, until his father's voice jerked him fully alert.
Yes.
Dad was talking to someone,
Ben thought.
Who's woken him at this time of night? Nobody's going to track us down here.
But Ben slid his arm to his side and felt for his lightsaber anyway, because now he would never wake suddenly without reaching for it, for as long as he lived. It was one more legacy of this war.
Oh, sweetheart, you found me. You found me. Stay a while.
Ben wondered if his father was talking in his sleep, then knew that he wasn't, because he could feel Luke's sudden emotion, like a light being shone in his face. His reflex was to scramble out of the tent and rush to his father's side, elated, with so much more to say and ask this time. But he stopped himself.
This was Dad's time, not his. Ben knew exactly who'd found Luke Skywalker. He smiled, laid his head on the makeshift pillow, and let the tears run down his face unchecked until sleep claimed him.
This is Mark Thompson. We hope you've enjoyed this production of Star Wars: Legacy of the Force, Revelation by Karen Travis. This program was directed by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Dan Zitt. Abridgment by Kevin Thompson. Text copyright 2008 by Lucasfilm Limited. Production copyright 2008, Random House Inc. All rights reserved.
Imperial Star Destroyer Bloodfin.
Leave him,
Fett said.
Arade, back off. I said he was Janus and I mean it.
Arade's voice came out of nowhere. Jaina realized she could hear the comlink from Myrta's helmet as it lay on one side on the deck.
Yes, Mandalore. You can't blame a boy for trying, though.
Let me go after Jason, Jaina said. He's hurt, he's tired, he's got an injured apprentice.
In what? The Bessu League? Great. And then what do you do when you catch him? You're not ready to do what needs doing. We'll make you ready.
Fett had hold of Myrta's shoulder as if he was going to shake the daylights out of her. Instead, he just reached out to touch her hair. A couple of awkward smoothing gestures that suggested she was burning his fingers.
I'm fine, Babu Weir, Myrta said. Me and Jaina, we're a good double act. You're a maniac, Jaina said. Tahiri could have killed you. She had to get past the Beskar first, and anyway, you got her. No, you got her. You severed an artery. Well, that's for killing an old man, Fett cut in.
Let's get back below. In case it slipped your minds, we've still got a few troopers to calm down.
He cocked his head suddenly as if he was listening to calm chatter.
Okay, Talgal says she's done that. It would be nice if someone told me when they were storming a hangar deck.
The hatch overhead opened, and Carid dropped down with Vavut, the pair of them hitting the deck with loud thuds. Carid lifted off his helmet and shook his head, like an animal shaking water out of its coat.
I enjoyed that, he said, all smiles. No offense, Jetty, but kneecapping your brother made my day. It surely did. If the Mandalore hadn't been such a spoil sport and made me stop, I'd have enjoyed putting that bolt in his...
Vavut slapped Myrta's back enthusiastically.
Gandossi. Now that's a daughter to have in the family. Does Arade know that you can stab like that?
Myrta grinned at him and shoved him in the shoulder, all rough Mandalorian affection.
I can cook, I can dig trenches, I can stab a Chakar,
and she laughed. Fett just shook his head and walked off down the passage, stooping slightly because there was so little headroom.
I'm going to find Palian's body. We're not savages after all.